Okay, so we put this like this. This is like that. Anyway, we were talking about strategic nuclear war. No, we were talking about your name.
It's nearly the same thing, yeah. So the other thing...
You've declared strategic nuclear war...
Against two letters of my name, the Z and the A. It's also symbolic in that sense, like I'm giving up everything between A and Z, except it's from Z to A.
Beautiful.
Except that's also not true, because if that were true, then you'd have to give up the things between the Z and the A, which I'm not doing.
You're not going with SA or SDA, SDA.
That would... also be confusing to communicate. So this is on the list of reasons why to change it to the 5-letter instead of the 7-letter version.
I appreciate that you still picked an ambiguous one, because you could still be Smida.
Could be, and I was actually thinking about that too. So I was like, how am I going to pronounce it? So I'm glad you pointed this out, because this was tugging at me for a long time, and finally I literally flipped a coin and said, all right, Smida, that's it. And then actually that's what I was leaning toward, because that's like a little bit closer to the pronunciation that I learned of like this Scandinavian word to smith or to forge, Smida. It's like in that language it's pronounced like Smida or something like this. Anyway, those are not American sounding sounds, so that's not happening, which is similar to what happened with my name in the past. It's a Polish word, and it was spelled S-Z-M-A-J-D-A. The J turned into an I in my family's history. So I'm not the first person that has changed the spelling.
Yeah.
And in fact, there are some Smedas out there that spell it with a Y in place of the J or the I. S-M-A-Y-D-A. Still kind of like, where did that word come from? Who knows? I can tell you, but like, who knows? Anyway... So what was the other thing I wanted to get to? Oh, yes, ease of communication of the word. So like when you're spelling that name, you get to the second letter and it's like, did he just say Z? Did he say C? What? I wasn't. Oh, shit.
Skmeda.
He's on the 6th letter already. And do you need me to spell that for you again? Let me just write it down for you. Anyway, so Smida will suffer from that too, but less so than Smeda.
How long did you consider just going with Smith, given that it means Smith?
Ha. So in the video that is associated with this project, if you go to m4t7.net/name, you can learn more. But anyway, that is the one frequently asked question in the frequently asked questions section. Specifically, it's like, why don't you just go all the way and change it to like something even more common? And that goes back to the point that I made in the previous recording, which is like, That would feel more like an affront. It's like, oh, you're really gonna change things, huh? So I'm changing things just a little bit. And Smith would have been like too much of a change, I feel like.
Your gateway should have been, you should have changed it to bastard or whatever it is in English. Just
fully lean into it. Yeah. Perhaps, but I was like, okay, let's clean up several of these different things at the same time. The difficulty of communication, the blemish on my brain from Dr. Vall laughing at me during roll call that one day.
I'm sorry, but what was this guy's name?
Dr. Vall. W-H-A-L.
Okay, that's an incredible amount of...
I don't know what that means, but it probably doesn't mean the same thing that Smeda means.
Yeah, also, yeah, that's a glass house situation if I've ever heard one. But
sure,
yeah.
but he was like 75-year-old physics professor that wore socks and sandals, do whatever the hell he wanted. So yeah. Good for him. Anyway, probably rest in peace. Not sure. But anyway, hi Dr. Vall.
Fuck him.
so that's happening. And okay, where were we? Oh yeah, the frequently asked questions section. So yeah, it was like, I'd like to, you pointed out one of the advantages of my last name before, which is like, oh, it's kind of an uncommon thing. So it's like if you get past the burden of actually being able to spell it or like even get it into your mind, like what did he just say, then it kind of sticks there. So there is like that barrier to entry, but like once you're in, you're in.
Yeah.
And Smida still does benefit from that a bit. It's like, oh, it's kind of weird. What was that again? And whereas Smith wouldn't have that effect. So kind of like the best of both worlds here.
What was your second pick?
as far as like alternative spelling or alternative name, there wasn't. So a while ago, I was thinking of doing this and just doing, I think, ZMAI.
Solid.
Just like cutting off Spy. Like several of the letters. This is before I knew like what it meant, and also, yeah. So I was like, let's just like cut off the letters at the beginning and the end of the word. And actually, I think I did this. If you go to paypal.me/what I just said, you can pay me.
Solid.
Yeah. So that's still a thing. I never like fully rolled that out. In fact, the only rollout of that one was the PayPal link that I just described. So that one was dead in the water. But yeah, this one is actually happening. Assuming court approval, I guess. But like it's out there now. Like people know me as Smita at this point. So yeah, we'll see what happens. But I think that what will happen is that I have a passport by December of this year that says the new name.
Are you going Matt or Matthew?
I'm still not sensitive to that.
Okay.
So I did not change my first name. Largely because I promised everybody after the Corey phase that I would not change, that they wouldn't have to learn any kind of new first name thing again.
And Matthew isn't quite the same thing.
Fair enough. Yeah. You can kind of go back and forth between Matt and Matthew. And I actually did that experiment back when I worked at my first company. I basically made/asked people to call me Matthew, and it kind of stuck. But the thing about going by Matthew versus Matt is like once one person calls you Matt, that's like falling down an energy level in terms of like, I don't know, atomic levels and chemistry is literally what I'm thinking about there.
It's closer to lead.
It's closer to lead. You've let that photon go, and now you're Matt, and you can't get back up unless you like kick some energy back into the system.
Yeah.
And that is not the stable equilibrium. Matthew is an unstable equilibrium. So although I have like a slight preference for Matthew, because like I could go kind of deep into this, but I
have a preference for Matthew with Smita on the end of it specifically.
Yeah.
Just because you end up tripping into it. It's funny because Matchmata is fine if you pronounce it with the sh, because it just sort of it just falls out.
Yeah.
But Smita is like slightly more deliberate, and Matthew is also slightly more deliberate. So Matthew Smita feels like it has more of a rhythm to it. Anyway,
It could be. Yeah. And like when you're using first and last names to like talk about a person, like you're already in some kind of formal-ish context. So it's fine to do that. But that, like on a practical basis of like, or not practical, but like an everyday basis of let's call a person a name, Matt works just fine for that.
Yeah.
I haven't really now that you bring this up, I actually haven't thought so much about that. It's like how do you introduce a person by like all of their names? Because when you're talking about a person like in a certain context like that, then yeah, you use like all of the name, i.e. the first, maybe middle, and then last name. To talk a little bit more about my opinion of like Matt versus Matthew, it's like, I guess I'd like Matthew more, but I have a greater desire for like consistency for like when people are going to call me one thing or the other, putting aside like the full formal name introduction kind of thing. It's like, hey, what do you prefer? Do you prefer like Paula or Paulette or something like that? And it's like, I don't mind, just pick one. That's kind of the thing that I care more about. I don't like it when people are asked that question and then they respond, oh, it's up to you to pick one. I don't like it when people say that. It's like, I don't want to, don't put that burden on me to like pick the name that I'm going to call you.
What do you want to eat?
No, yeah, exactly. don't do that to me. Don't put that on me. Yeah. So it's like, here, you have the option. Or the options, and like just pick one. So when someone asks me that question, I'll say, Matt, that's it. Because like that's what people generally call me, and then the consistency is kind of better. And if they're going to call me something else, that's on them, and that's fine. I'm not going to get all wound up about that.
You could say it's short for mathematics.
Yeah. I had a teacher named Mike Mesterton Gibbons. And Mike is usually short for Michael. His wasn't. And his publisher actually like put the name Michael on the front of his book as like, hey, the author of this book is Michael Mesterton Gibbons, hyphenized last name. And he had to write to them. It's like,
is it Michelangelo?
What do you mean?
What was his full name?
His full name was just M-I-K-E, Mike.
Okay.
His legal name.
The other way around.
His legal name was Mike.
Okay.
And they put his name incorrectly on the cover of his first book. They wrote the name Michael. And he was like, guys, you just printed thousands of this book with the wrong name on it. What are you doing? But yeah, so anyway, that's when I start going by mathematics or when I tell people that my name is short for mathematics, probably that won't appear on the front of any book.
Mathematics Smita.
Yeah, don't do that, please.
Yeah. Activity whitelist for the first week of June.
Oh, yeah. I wrote this on the plane. I sent that message to you as kind of a way to encourage myself to do this. So I've got, before I like take out the list, the idea here is like, hey, I'm coming back to Florida. I'm back in my house and back with the opportunity to like make new habits or like decide what it is that I want to do. So I was like, okay, for the first week when I'm back, during my working hours, I'm just gonna have like the white list. In other words, like the list of activities that I'm like allowed to do during that time. And I have a couple of default activities too. So one of my weaknesses that I've noticed is that like when I'm facing a difficult moment of work, I'll tend to like go and like go back into my comfort zone, and I don't like that. I do that. I don't like that tendency of mine. So here are a couple of the activities on the whitelist, and I'll point out some of the default activities that I will allow myself to like default back into if I am experiencing one of those moments of like, all right, this is hard. Like for example, when I'm working on a coding problem, like the daily LEET code challenge. These are like interview-ish kinds of questions. Like for example, hey, you have a room represented by a matrix, ones and zeros, and you have a robot, a vacuum robot that can only turn right. It encounters an obstacle, turns right. How many spaces in this room will your vacuum? Stuff like that. And it's like, oh crap, this is a hard part of this hard problem. It's actually a medium problem according to LeetCode. Anyway.
I apologize. I had a very hard time concentrating on the details of that question after you said that it was a room in the Matrix. I was just imagining Agent Smith's appearing in the room.
So you have Agent Smith in your Matrix room, and you have to find out
and he can only turn right.
Yeah. And you have to find out how many spaces Smith will clean.
All right. Very good.
So anyway, when things get hard, I have a tendency sometimes to like go get up and clean something, for example, or go like I was gonna say have a snack, but that's not true. I've mostly conquered the snack thing. What else? So those kinds of behaviors, not okay. But what is okay in a situation like that is close your eyes and have a moment of meditation. That's fine. And it also is like not one of those things that sucks you in. Like for example, another quote unquote favorite of mine in a situation like this is sometimes to go to Hacker News. That's not good. So that's something I'm going to set aside. By the way, not as bad at this kind of thing as I was with like Reddit and YouTube several years ago. I would like get stuck in that trap for a while. I haven't been that bad, but I could get even better.
So, what grade of reporting does Hacker News do?
Excuse me?
What grade of reporting does Hacker News do?
Hacker News isn't that kind of thing. It's rather like, it's kind of like Reddit for Silicon Valley people, I guess.
So low. That's what I'm getting.
Oh yeah, it's like a link aggregator. You go like to another website news organization.
What? I'm trying to get a feel for how restrictive this information diet actually is. Because going to a place called Hacker News that I've never been to, I haven't heard someone use the term hacker in a long time. So I'm being forced to orient myself around what that might entail.
Okay.
What would you find on this website?
One thing is like, hey, everybody, check out this app that I just made. And you click into it and it's like some kind of like some
virus.
I haven't stumbled upon one of those yet, but maybe like one out of every 100 of those things.
Hacker
you get
news.
A virus. Yeah, you get hacked.
Generate news.
It could be. I don't know. What's another thing that I found? I think Kaji Small Web is one of the apps that I found, which is like, it's kind of like StumbleUpon, but for 2024.
Sounds perfect.
I like it a lot. I like that I found Kaji Small Web. I don't use it as much as I should, but like during one of those excursions over to Hacker News, I found this thing that like, the idea is like you click over to Kaji Small Web and it's like an aggregator of people's blogs. And it's like, oh, these like little blogs that I'm finding on this website are like kind of engaging. And it's like, I've got a couple people's blogs like bookmarked as a result of going to that. That's like a better than average kind of find from Hacker News.
I was about to say, this sounds generally positive.
Yeah. So. So like sometimes you will get like a golden nugget like that. And I'm glad that I found that, but I would prefer to not always have it as an option to go and like, hey, I'm feeling tired. Hey, I'm feeling like not doing work right now. Let me go and see what's going on. So the alternative to that is close your eyes for a couple seconds and just like lean into the discomfort and then say like, okay, I can get through this discomfort. Come back. Like your eyes are open once again now. And then like continue working on the thing that you were just working on. Cause like sometimes these things are going to be hard. In fact, like that's one of the reasons why I'm working on what I'm working on now. Cause it's hard. And I need to get more comfortable with that. So
what part of it do you enjoy?
The satisfaction of figuring out how many spaces that Roomba is going to clean. That's very satisfying when I can do that kind of thing.
Very good.
Yeah. Like you celebrate with like a little, if you're me, you celebrate with a little fist pump after you do that. It's like, yes, I figured this out. And like, maybe I'll be able to like do that during an interview. So like learning more techniques for doing this kind of stuff. Like here's another example. I was working through another one of these kinds of problems. And the other day I was like able to, so I was giving myself an hour a day to do these problems. So in other words, during my vacation-ish that I just got back from, I wanted to keep like the minimum daily dose of working on this like career transition, for lack of a better name, for this project. And the minimum daily dose for the last several days was to do a daily LeetCode problem and to do a certain number of job applications. And coming back to number one there, doing the daily LeetCode problem was defined as one of two things. It was either spending 1 hour on it and providing notes on it. It's like, oh, here's what I would have done if I like had more time, or like we're smarter, or like we're, you know, more well-equipped to like solve a problem like this, or finish the problem. And finishing the problem is generally more satisfying than banging your head against it for an hour. That sometimes is not fun. But it's like, okay, so set that to the side. I had the plan the other day to go to a play with my uncle and aunt. And I was like, okay, I have 25 minutes to work on this right now. I don't have my hour. So like, if I don't do this, I'm going to have to come back and spend another amount of time, up to 35 minutes when I get home, and I'm going to be tired. So like, it's now or never. Like, let's solve this problem. And it was a medium problem, which are like generally kind of hard for me, and generally kind of hard for a lot of people. That's not like discounting my skills. So anyway, I'm like, hey, I've seen this kind of pattern before. I think I know how to solve this problem. This is a sliding window problem. And like that, like recognizing, okay, I've seen this technique. I know how to apply this technique. I haven't seen this particular problem before, so like parts of it are novel, but like I know the general pattern. And yet I learned it several weeks ago. So it's like, do I still have it? And yes, okay. It's like, do this, do the while loop like this, and then like the inner for loop, and like make sure that they're not overlapping, and like write that new little bit of logic. And it's like, this was the rare occasion on which I had one small error. Like I forgot to like increment something, but then, so the first time I submitted it, it was wrong. And then I put that one increment thing in, solved it. So it was like, yes. All right. Two attempts. Had to put that one little increment thing in there, and I got it. 22 minutes. I still have a little bit of time to like prepare, to like go to the play. And anyway, those little moments, it's like, okay, I'm making some progress here, and that feels good.
How's the job search going?
Probably not as good as the leak code problems, in the sense that I am having to. Let's put it this way. I go into my email box and say, all right, I'm going to look past these rejections, like select all and then mark as read and archive them. And that is the most common experience there. So it's kind of a drag that I'm not getting interviews, and that all of my peers are not getting interviews literally. So there were 15 of us that graduated from this, most recent cohort of Rhythm School, and I'm looking at my watch to find out the date, to find out how many days it's been since we've graduated. It's been 67 days. One out of the 16 of us have gotten a job at this point.
Damn.
Yeah, so that sucks. The other thing is that...
Did you expect the one... How surprised are you at who the person was?
0%.
Okay.
I was like, he's going to be the first person to get a job. And that was not like, prediction that was unique to me. It was clear to all of us, instructors and students, that he was going to be the guy like to get a job first, probably. So yeah, that sucks. Doesn't suck for this gentleman. Like, good for him. Like, we are all actually, this guy is like a great guy. He's like very encouraging to the rest of us too. Like the guy that not only will get the job, but like you want him to get the job too. So
sure.
Like that's a situation for him. So good for him. And also there have been like some of my peers that I haven't heard from since, the final day of the course. And there are also many of us that are like showing up to the weekly, like check-in calls. We have like a Zoom call every week to like talk about like, hey, how's it going for you and so on. Anyway, so it's been somewhat discouraging to see that, but I say only somewhat discouraging because like I faced, this was back in like December and January. I faced I was thinking to myself, like, did I make a big mistake here? And I was like not in a good way for maybe like 2 or 3 weeks there, thinking like, oh shit, like, but not only is this class hard, not sure if I'm going to be able to make it to the end, but also even if I do make it to the end, like, did I make a good decision here? So I went through that like for some time back in January. And now, although it is a situation that like objectively kind of sucks because it's like slow to get interviews, I've had 2 interviews so far. I'm still optimistic that like given the amount of time that I like can potentially dedicate to this, so I have like a first evaluation point that I'm giving for myself in September, and perhaps a second evaluation point like in March of next year. So given the amount of time that I've like dedicated to this and like the hope that the market will come back for this, I'm not feeling like that sense of dread that I was feeling back in January.
Speaking of dread, have you seen the announcements out of Microsoft over the last 2 weeks? Or have you been that unplugged?
Tell me.
Oh, that's very exciting. I don't know how we can do this on the podcast. You're familiar with Copilot.
Yeah.
What if I told you there was a laptop dedicated to Copilot?
Ooh, okay.
A kind of Copilot Plus. This is not a subscription service, despite that being exactly what it sounds like.
Wow.
These are Copilot actually kind of impressive. Plus PCs.
Plus PCs, okay.
Developed in collaboration with Qualcomm, a company you may know for crashing and burning, trying to make high-end hardware for several generations now.
All right.
Are apparently putting out a set of processors that have bleeding-edge neural plasticity, and they are using this natively on these Windows platforms through a flagship feature most of the rest of this stuff already exists in Adobe and other sorts. The new feature is called Recall.
What's that to?
Recall is a full computer search that is AI powered through analysis of screenshots of your screen.
This is the part that I've heard about.
That it takes every 3 seconds for months.
Yeah.
Don't worry, it will not save DRM copyright material. Okay. Sensitive information is up for grabs, but it will not it will not accidentally save pictures of SpongeBob on your computer, so don't worry about that.
Okay.
So how do you feel about this new and exciting paradigm in an OS you don't use?
That so that last comment about the OS I don't use, when I saw that last part, so I was unaware of everything up until you said the screenshots of your stuff every couple of seconds or so, and I was like, ah, yes, feels so good to be here in Linux, because they wouldn't do that to me. They might do that to me eventually, but like if that kind of thing's gonna hit, it's gonna hit the other ones first, and I can then be ready. I can like really start putting my tinfoil hat on, for example. So anyway, glad I'm not using Windows. You said like, oh, this is exciting at the beginning of that, because
yeah, that was extreme sarcasm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which I picked up on at least a little bit of.
Okay.
Right. Sure. But thank you. Anyway, so I suppose that one reason you would call it sarcastically exciting is because like, oh, this is a thing that could like make it so that this market never comes back. And in other words, like I don't get the job because everything's being co-piloted or piloted by co-pilots. So I am worried about that world in a certain sense, but I'm also not worried about that world because like if that really does take off, then maybe I won't need the job. Like my backup plan right now is not explicit. I don't have this written down anywhere, but like written on some of my neurons, we could say, is like I could lean into the early retirement thing. So like that could be it. Like if this job doesn't work out, if this job search doesn't work out, perhaps I just keep this as a hobby. And we've talked about me exploring this stuff in a more hobbyist and amateur sense. Like I'd just be the dilettante who has like coding as one of his skills.
Right.
Yeah, if this laptop does everything, if this laptop takes my job that I don't yet have, then I'll declare, I could like declare, all right, like you go ahead and take this, you well played, fair and square, you co-pilot, and I'm going to go and like sail now.
I predict that this PC line will sell under 10,000 units.
When you brought it up, I was like, I don't know. Maybe you were withholding some kind of distribution news or something like that.
No, I'm just trying to imagine who could possibly be excited about this, and I'm coming up short. I would love if Copilot actually understood how to competently code in things like, oh, I don't know, Power Apps, which is a native platform for development on Microsoft's own software. It's not good at that.
Uh-huh.
There's not a whole lot else I need AI to do. So, you know, as I keep coming back to, I said it in just the heat of the moment, but it's been burned in my brain. It's like, what do I need a picture of? Like, it really doesn't come up very much, you know? It's just like, it's a use case that's quite limited in its overall. I do, the only thing I like in AI, but I am not willing to give Adobe my money yet again, is I do like a sketchbook that tries to guess what I'm trying to draw. I think that's an entertaining and potentially useful thing where you draw and it just sort of subtractively tries to infer what the thing you're trying to.
Photoshop have that now?
Yeah, it's got kind of an infill thing. Now, thankfully, Adobe has prevented me from caring about it because they they are so worried about recouping their costs on AI.
Yeah.
the same way everyone else. That's the tidal wave that's going to kill all this shit, is that they do have to make money on it someday, mm-hmm. and they're not going to. There's no market. It's a plagiarism machine. They're charging for it the same way they charged for Dolly, where you get X number of them and then you have to re-up on your credits.
Yeah.
And I'm not thinking about that while I'm doing creative work.
Yeah.
Absolutely not. There's no fucking way am I going to concern. I don't pay for DLC in games. I'm not going to pay for it in my productivity software.
Mm-hmm.
No fucking chance.
And I bet that you're not alone there.
Yeah. I bought the GPU so I could do it natively. I'm not going to pay for their cloud service to do whatever the fuck it does on the side. That market is insanely profitable for the people who own the servers, and it's not going to work for anybody else. They're going to shove it down everyone's throats, but that really does have a limit, because you really don't have to use this stuff.
How easy is it to set this kind of stuff up to use natively on the GPU?
As long as the software is built to do it, it's fine. The problem is I assume there's no way to do it natively on the Adobe. I haven't looked into this stuff that much. Uh-huh. I haven't looked into it that hard, but I remember being on the Adobe site, because I was once again, every 6 months I flirt with going back to a full Windows setup, mm-hmm. because there are advantages, especially in graphically accelerated workloads. Windows or Linux, frankly, makes more sense than Mac OS does. But then I log into the Adobe website and I remember why I left.
Oh no. Okay.
It's just, they don't know how to appeal to people like me. Like, everything I touch in Adobe feels like they don't hire anyone who understands how user interfaces work.
Is one of the pieces of like media software that you're talking about there video editing
yep.
too? Okay.
Yep.
What is Adobe's offering called?
Premiere Pro.
Yeah. You currently use the Mac.
Yeah. Thing. I use Final Cut Pro.
Final Cut. Yeah.
Premiere Pro is why I'm sitting in front of a MacBook right now.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Because I could not stand using it.
I see.
And I needed a video editing solution.
Yeah. For the couple of videos that I make, I use KDEN Live, the free open source offering from who knows where.
I'll bet it's more fun to use than Premiere.
I like it. It's easy to use, at least. Yeah. And I don't ask too much from it. I just like clip stuff together. Sometimes I strip out the audio and like put one audio part over one other video clip, and I do some like fade in and out and title clips and stuff like that. But very basic stuff.
Yeah, I don't do that much either. Frankly, I just want it to handle well. I want it to be the thing that sold me on Final Cut is it's perfectly stable.
Mm-hmm.
It never crashes.
Yeah, that's important.
And yeah, that can't be said for some other pieces of software I've used.
I would edit more videos if I had my camera. Has my camera turned up?
Oh, it did. I figured. Okay, yeah, cool. I found it. I was gonna send you a video, but I didn't feel like trying to plug it into my laptop to send you a video.
Can I guess where it was?
Yeah.
What was it near the sink?
Which sink?
Was it near the inside bathroom sink to my left?
It was.
Okay. What was it? Was it in the pile of stuff in the bedroom over there?
It was sitting on the towels in the cupboard next to the sink.
Okay.
So you got really unlucky.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
of the way that I use towels.
Okay.
If I used towels like a normal human being, you would have found it weeks earlier. But because I use four towels at a time, my rotation's very slow.
I see. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, and also that was in a part of the building that I just don't use. So like I was there for that project, and not otherwise.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So I've got some more footage to put into KDEN Live now.
Absolutely. Great. You've got an extra minute and a half of me trying to get it to go in focus, which it was just refusing to do.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Well, in addition to the extra minute and a half, I mean, I have all of the stuff from like the second day of me coming in to record. That was the day that we were mostly you were replumbing the house.
Yeah.
And I recorded a little bit of that. I'd like to. So I only touched like the first 2 minutes of the demolition outside, And I would like to put more together. I mean, in the chat channels that we have, I said soon in theaters, but in French. And that was a lie because I lost the camera and now it's like 5 weeks later.
All in good. I mean, what is soon really? But
yeah, it's all relative. You're right. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Speaking of, you had open source contributions as the last item on the list.
Yeah. I'm very excited to announce that I am now an open source contributor.
Solid.
Yeah. So I made my first. I had my first pull request merged into an open source project on May 1st.
This is the first time someone has said those words, those like that terminology out loud, and it like intuited in my brain.
Yeah.
I have all the push pull concept. Has never sat right with me. But like when you said it there, like you're requesting to pull it in and it merged into, I've never, anyway, continue.
Yeah. So the request is that the maintainer of the project pull in the code
pull
that you've written.
And
on the branch that you, or me as the case may be, just prepared for it.
Yeah.
And the way I found this was, so a little bit of backstory here. I just got back from my fourth place that I've been to this year. So far this year, I've been to, aside from here, Montreal, Austin, Denver, and some place in New Jersey. On the first trip, Montreal, I had a phone call with a mentor of mine scheduled for like the second day that I was there. This was the day that I was expecting to get to the house that we all rented together to see the eclipse. And it's like, okay, this is going to be right on schedule. I'm going to get to the house. Jacob told me that he checked with the French person. That's going to be key here. That check-in time is at 11 a.m. And I'm like, oh, that's kind of weird, but okay. It's like, well, I'll believe that. Anyway, I got to the house and was informed in French that, no, you don't have, this is not your check-in time yet. This is not your house yet. So I said, fuck. And I had to go find a place to go and take this phone call. I had to walk through the light rain with my not yet waterproof rain shell. Sidebar, I now do have a waterproof rain shell, which I got excellent use out of during yesterday's trip. Anyway, so the end of sidebar. So let's go now to the VIP cafe, someplace in a strip mall somewhere on the outskirts of Montreal, where I took a call. I had a call with my mentor and she challenged me, one of my mentors, she challenged me to pick several open source projects that interested me, like five of them, send them to her, like, and specifically to find one of the issues. By the way, these projects are all on GitHub, like that's where almost all of this stuff happens, kind of like where all the social media stuff happens is Twitter in a certain sense. All of the open source stuff is happening in GitHub in a certain sense. So she challenged me to go both find projects that I'm interested in and also find open issues on these projects that I think that I could handle. So I did that. It's like one of the pieces of advice that I've gotten is take people's advice and follow up, like actually do the thing that they're suggesting that you do and then follow up with them. So I sent her an email a couple of days later. Hey, here are the five projects and here are five issues, like a total of five, not five each, the five issues that I could possibly work on. And she said, all of these are good. Pick one and go. And she suggested one project. And I'm like, I looked at that project. I'm in Austin now. I looked at that project and was like, oh shit, like everyone who's already good at engineering is already working on this project. Seems that I don't have a place here. But I found another one, Task Warrior and Time Warrior, its cousin, the command line to-do app. And they had some open issues, and I'm like,
what's the difference between Time that. And Task Warrior?
Time Warrior is a time tracker. Did I say that right? Yeah, Time Warrior is a time tracker.
I mean, it makes sense.
Warrior is a to-do list.
That seems like a very different magisteria.
Yeah, and one of the reasons these two
depending
projects
on its complexity, I guess I don't.
You're right. Yeah. And the reason that these two projects are like cousins with each other is because they have integrations between them, so you can use them both at the same time, or well, not both at the same time, but they can like tie to each other in the way that you use them. So I was like, hey, there's an issue that I could do, and I did it. I like forked the repo and I made a new branch and I like worked through the stuff. So the issue was they had a bunch of test files. So when you've got a software project, you don't want to just like put it out there. You want to have like, you want to have tests that make sure whenever you make a change, it doesn't break the whole thing. And like they got a bunch of test files, but they're like testing different things, but also more importantly, like in different ways. So like testing different parts of the app. So some of them are Python scripts. Some of them are C++ files. Some of them are shell scripts. And yet all of these things have the same file extension. And that makes it hard to like modify the tests or to even know what's going on with these test files. So I changed the names.
The names...
Yes.
Of the various files.
Yes.
Which are written in different code bases.
That's right.
Anyway, keep going.
In different languages.
Yeah.
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 They have the same file extension.
Yeah.
And that's fine. Like, you can do that.
No, it's not. That's not fine.
It's fine in the sense that...
There's a really intuitive, correct... Anyway.
It's fine in the sense that it will run if you set it up to run that way, right? But someone's like, hey, someone pointed out the point that you're making right now, which
that's
is kind of
literally the shower once a day of code hygiene. Like, that's an incredibly low bar.
Fair enough.
Yeah. I
agreed with you when I saw this. I was like, someone should do something about this. And now I am that person, all right? So I'm going to be that person. I'm going to make a little utility that renames the things according to some of the stuff that I see in the file. Like, I think the way I did it was I identified at the beginning of each file, it says, like, basically, it's the first line is like, hey, this is a C++ file, is basically what you see at the top. So I made a utility to, like, go through each of the first lines, rename the file based on that, put it in the, do that. And also, like, fix some of the orchestration scripts that like use these files. Like, we're not just going to use the .t, stands for dot test, anymore. Instead, we're going to use this and this and this. C++, Python, .sh for shell. And then I like did those things, changed all those like orchestration files too, and then was like, hey everyone, here's what I've done. So there's like, the issue is like a little message board where the guys are talking about like, hey, wouldn't it be nice if, and then 5 days of silence, and then here comes some guy out of nowhere, me, and say, and I got to say, hey, I did it. And they're like, oh, cool. Like, just could you change like these little things too? Like, we're really glad that you did this. Like, they were encouraging. And if you could like change these couple extra things too, like that'd be good. So I did those and the thing got merged in and everyone was happy about it. And I was like, oh, it feels good to be a contributor to open source. So that was that. That was May 1st. And I could go into the second and more involved one that I finished the day before I flew out of Denver. Very satisfying to like hit that and then have that milestone and like be able to like guilt-free fly to a vacation part of my trip. But I got that done and... Yeah, so now I've made two of these like contributions, and that feels good.
Two?
Yes.
What was the other one?
The second one was I feel like I was just talking about that one for longer than we intended for me to talk about that.
Hey, whatever.
So the second one was
we'll just put a beep in.
We can beep it, sure.
Yeah. That's right. That's actually never what I use beeps for. I don't use beeps to pretend like to omit sections of the podcast. I do that when there's interruptions. But we can start a new tradition. We can make that a season 12 thing.
Okay. Yeah, we could interrupt ourselves too.
We could do that too.
Anything's possible.
I'm just curious what's going on in open source.
The second one. So this is now a focus on Time Warrior. The first one was Task Warrior. Then I went to a meeting. So they invited me. It's like, hey, you've made a contribution to the project. Cool. Like, you want to come to our meeting? And I'm like, yeah, like, let's do this. So I went to the meeting, and the guy who's focused on Time Warrior is like, hey, I could use some help with some of the web stuff. Not the stuff on the app, specifically because the app... So Task Warrior is largely written in Rust. I don't know Rust. I mean, maybe sure I could learn like some of it, but like that's not what I'm like specialized in at this point. I more know like web stuff, and I can do like some little utilities like that renaming thing too. Sure, that's fine. But the thing that the Time Warrior guy needed help with was, hey, when I update the docs on Time Warrior, I have to now manually go onto the website and change the docs there too. Like basically he had to like copy and paste the files from one repo over to another repo, the second repo being the website for Time Warrior. So to recap what I just said, there are two repos. The Time Warrior app repo, that's where like the software is, and then the Time Warrior.net repo, that's where the website is. And in both places, you have the documentation for the app. So you may know if you use the command line, you can use the following command to learn about whatever. If you type in man space Time Warrior, man Time Warrior stands for manual, then you get to learn more about Time Warrior. Or you can do it with anything. Type in man and then anything. You can learn about anything. Anyway, so those are the docs.
I assume that works with man. I've never done man.
It definitely does work. Try it now.
All right. What do we got? Man, apropos, what is? Oh, there's several. Okay. Very exciting.
You seeing the different numbers?
What? No, you can tell. You can apparently in terminal, you can use apropos or what is instead of man. Both of which are way longer. I don't know why you'd use those, but.
That might be a Mac only thing. I didn't know about either of those.
It's possible. It's got. Man sect, man path, pager, page, keyword. Anyway, these are parameters. All right, so very good.
Yeah.
Exploration into the open space
of the manuals.
Of the manuals.
Yeah. And so anyway, the question is, for the purposes of this conversation, the question is, how do you get the things that come up when you type in man Time Warrior? So there are some docs. And his problem, Thomas's problem, was that those docs needed to be manually updated on the website too. And wouldn't it be nice if when you make a new release of Time Warrior, that the docs just update on the website automatically? So I did it. I learned about a new thing called GitHub Actions. So there's a thing in GitHub. The sidebar there is like I came up with one solution that requires like a dedicated web server to be listening for like any changes to that. And I proposed that solution. He's like, we don't have a dedicated web server for this. And I thought to myself, but we could so easily set one up. And then I was like, hang on a second, Matt. One of the reasons that we're approaching this whole like learning how to code thing in the way that we are now, we being me, that is that I'm trying to be like more collaborative with people. I'm trying to work with people and not just like set up my own stuff by myself. So if this were just me, I would have like continued down with that. I'm just going to set up a web server that's always listening for changes and automatically pushes the things. But then he said like, no, for some stuff on this project, we're using this thing called GitHub Actions, which one of the things is like when something happens in a GitHub repo, it can then like trigger something that happens somewhere else. It's not that easy. Like you have to like set up a script, a different kind of script to send a post request, like, hey, something changed request to a different part of it. And then suddenly your second GitHub repo will be like, oh, holy shit, something just happened out on the internet. I got a post request. So then I set it up to run this second script, a second GitHub action in the second repo. And then I wrote like this whole nice little Python script that like takes the information from the first action, what files changed and their contents, encoded in Base64 because that was like something I needed to do there. That took like 3 hours to figure out. Anyway, it decodes that Base64 encoded thing. And then it's like, hey, we're going to make this new thing. We're going to automatically make a new branch. We're automatically going to make a new pull request and we're automatically going to merge it in. And then the website automatically updates the docs. And it's like, I figured out how to do that. That's cool. So I got that. I got it all like wired together on the final day in Denver from this tiny desk with just my laptop, pointing out to myself there. It's like, I don't need a big fancy monitor to do this stuff. I brought, by the way, my external monitor with me on this trip, and I think I'm not going to travel with that thing anymore. The laptop size second monitor.
The 14, not the 27.
Correct. Okay. Yeah. The 14. And it's like, I set it up a couple times. But like I've noticed this can be a whole other conversation itself. So let's put a pin in that for a second about like whether to use like an external monitor or like generally this. And we talked about this before, the ergo-mechanical keyboard that I talked about a few episodes ago, that we talked about a few episodes ago. I think that's not the way, or at least I think that I need to restrict myself from the polishing of the foundation and just do the work. And like I unfolded my laptop and inspired by a rock climbing based conversation with one of the instructors with Rhythm School, I met up with one of my instructors there in Denver. And we reminded me that like a lot of this is just doing the work. So I spent the next 2 days just doing that work, figuring out how to wire all this stuff together. And man, it was satisfying to like figure it out and to be able to, by this deadline I set for myself, say to the guy in charge of this project, hey, I figured this thing out. So that kicks ass. I'm really glad I did that.
So let's move on to the consumerist angle on this. External monitors. What are we doing here?
So when I was...
What's your rig?
My rig is a 5-year-old ThinkPad X1 Carbon Gen 7, the one with the track point, which I'm no longer really using. I finally got fed up with this thing. So I'm using the trackpad now, okay? So that's no longer part of my rig. In the sense that I turned the sensitivity on it all the way down to like nothing, so I can basically not use it now. By the way, the reason to use a track point is your fingers get to stay on the home row, and if you got some mousing to do, you just got to move your index finger over a little bit. And yet, this is the kind of thing I'm talking about. It's like, who gives a shit? Just get the work done. I don't care how you get it done. You have to move your finger. Like, it's cool that you like can do your mousing by moving your finger half an inch and like using the track point. But no one cares. And it's like, I got a thumb. My thumb's already next to the track point, the track pad. If I need to like do a little bit of mousing, I don't need to like move my hand from the home row. I can just use my thumb to mouse. And if I have more mousing to do, I can use my index finger, whatever. And now that opens a door to the same thing that I was talking about a little while ago, a couple weeks ago, about using ergo-mechanical keyboards. It's like, Jesus, the train of thought just completely left me.
That's good, because I got hit with one of the most intense deja vus I've ever felt just now. I am confident that we just jumped 5 weeks into the past.
Wow, it's good to be back here.
I would just swear to God you said exactly what you just said before.
Probably did.
I can't confirm. but anyway, no, about just getting the work done. See, I've run in like the exact opposite direction where, because we used to complain about all the time, clearly still do complain about the creation of a perfect foundation. Yep. And I've tried to just lean into that hard enough that it results in work getting done, because in a lot of fields, Warren Buffett's old adage, which he's been failing to live up to for quite a couple of years now, about never losing money.
Uh-huh.
It's the rule number one of making money is to not lose it.
Okay.
I've developed an insistence with doing things like the correct way.
Yes.
Because the problem is every time you let a subpar process through, you have to start doing a balancing act. It immediately invokes a measurement of whether or not you have crossed some line and need to go back and fix what you've done. And part of my way of inaugurating this attitude, which I've been following for a little while, but I've been getting more aggressive about, is that I repurchased something I lost a long time ago that was always emblematic of this.
What's that?
This is a...
Center punch?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
I rebought the Staritz automatic center punch.
You've talked about the center punch on this podcast before.
Yeah, this thing does exactly one thing perfectly. Uh-huh. And as a result, deserves a spot in my bag. And I'm glad I looked it back up in a moment of weakness, because it's actually... it was cheaper now than when I bought it the first time. And it doesn't feel any worse. I don't feel like it has, you know, Star, it seems to still make reasonably good tools. Tools, for whatever reason, haven't been impacted by the inflation over the last 4 years. They're still pretty much the same price. Okay. Which is even stranger because I would have sworn tariffs should have been making them more expensive.
This is the same manufacturer.
Yes, and, it is the exact same one.
The previous one didn't have this nice black accent on it, I think, but you got like the same model, maybe different color.
No, I'm pretty sure it's exactly the same.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I must be misremembering.
I could also be doing the same thing. Yeah. But it works. It works perfectly. And it is something that you don't strictly need. You can either get an awl and a hammer and smack something, or you can just jam the drill in and get close enough.
Yeah.
Or you can just use the tool that is perfectly suited to the job. And the thing that has, which is very important in my atelic lifestyle of not having any actual goals, is that it is intrinsically satisfying to do, because when you get to be an old man like I am at 34, you've
been 60 something for a while.
I've been 60 for a long time, and what you keep coming to, which has also been a topic of this podcast before and deserves to be more of a topic in this podcast, is the utter dissatisfaction and ephemerality of accomplishment. If you simply accomplish in the process of, I was about to say something that felt like marketing speak practically, the accomplishment of achievement. If you are going through the steps of labor in a way that is itself satisfying, then you don't have to worry as much about where you're going. This is always evident when you see construction workers working. If they're any good at their jobs, they have none of the quibbles with modern life that office workers do, because office workers are always navigating a field of compromises. The reason for that's pretty straightforward. If their job was easy or elegant, a computer would be doing it.
Uh-huh.
They're there because it's messy.
Yeah.
But if you're putting up a building or pouring a foundation or anything like that, and you're good at it and you have the right tools to do it, you don't need anything else. It might suck outside, it might be hot or exhausting, but the simple act of progressing through something competently is more than enough reward on its own.
Mm-hmm.
So I've just leaned into that as hard as I can, since I'm never getting a real computer job ever again. So.
You're not considering so your current job is kind of grandfathered in.
Yeah.
You're kind of allowed to do that. But after this one,
I only kind of do computer stuff. I do tinkering on the side, and it's very satisfying to work in Power Apps to build, you know, like a little, build my little data model in my not SQL on my not web application. Like any quote unquote real programmer would scoff at what I do for a quote unquote living, but they're also all insane and depressed and fat, and you know, I don't have to listen to them.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't respect basically any of them.
Mm-hmm.
They're all those things I already mentioned. And it's because they get the little thrill, which I do understand, when they solve a problem. And the thing that I fear for you now, Matt, more than most other things, is that you have, while you have whitelisted some specific ancillary activities, the thing that you've whitelisted those activities because you are considering them to be your vices, as opposed to the interview-like challenges and quizzes that allow you to feel a satisfaction that, while you should feel it at work as often as you can, will be probably almost certainly way less common when you start working.
Huh.
And I do wonder, you may luck into a job where that's not a problem. But generally speaking, programming, unless you're quote unquote grandfathered in, if you're in a senior position where you get to do whatever you want, you probably have to shovel a lot of bureaucratic shit to do that. Maybe you won't. Maybe you won't. I don't know. But if I'm looking for ways to be cynical about where you're going, which is my job, is to be your cynical, your cynicism guru in your life.
Yeah, fair enough. Okay.
That is the one that I think you might run into, and I'm curious how you will handle it.
Yeah, we'll see what happens.
Yeah. It may not be a problem. You may find a job where that's not an issue, but it seems to come up a lot. There's a lot of comics about it. So.
I don't know. I guess I'm approaching this like career pivot in kind of an idealistic way here, where I'm like, oh well, I didn't care about the mission before, so I'm gonna go find a place where I do care about the mission and therefore like willing to shovel some shit for at least a little bit of time, because like, hey, this is like on the way to a more important goal here.
I
suppose that if you're right about that, if I like try a number of jobs in this field and can't find the one that doesn't feel like shoveling enough, then yeah, I suppose that I'll just like call it quits on that one too.
Well, you do have enough agency to fight against that, probably, in jobs. Again, once you've demonstrated an amount of competency, that is the important thing. You've mentioned consigning yourself to being, you know, an underling for some period of time, but I imagine you are going to need to assert some degree of authority rapidly, or you will get tired of that lackey position, I think. That's a guess, again. An educated guess, but a guess nonetheless. I hated that rhymed.
I appreciate that, though. Not the rhyme, but I appreciate the perspective on that.
Yeah, you're going to have to push against, unless you have a very freewheeling boss, which can be a problem on its own. you're going to have to be careful about that. But you got to get the job first, so one step at a time.
Or just work on Task Warrior.
Or you just work on Task Warrior.
That's it.
Make all of those, get...
the things, yeah.
I don't know what...
The pull requests.
I mean, get coins is the obvious thing to call them. But do they have any
kinda
point...
probably exists.
Do they have a point system in GitHub? Is there a currency of some kind?
I guess repos can get stars on them, but I don't have...
You don't have a star count?
That's like a repo-specific thing as opposed to a person-specific thing.
No wonder open source is so underfunded. They don't even have a currency system backing it up yet. They don't have a point. They haven't gamified it.
I guess also they have like followers. So like you can get followers on GitHub, but I'm not sensitive to that, at least not right now.
Yeah. I mean, that sounds horrible. I wouldn't want people to know. I'm here for the love of the game, goddammit. I don't need people snooping around, looking at my pull requests, whatever I do on there. There's probably a whole community of people on GitHub that just talk shit in forums and stuff.
Oh God. Yeah. You must be right about that. I haven't seen it, but you gotta be right. I'm not going to set up the external monitor, or I'm going to be less apt to set up the external monitor, because it was more of that, like, so you were talking about the construction worker who's just like getting satisfaction from the process.
Yeah.
And I get some satisfaction of like setting up a nice workstation, and like using a fancy keyboard and stuff like this. And I guess this is the train of thought that I lost earlier. And I look at myself, and it's like I look more specifically at the results that I'm delivering, and it's like the analog to the construction worker would be like the guy that set out his tools in a really nice way, like on the side of the job site, and has just been doing that for weeks, and there's no house.
Let me to propose an alternative analogy. Okay. This would be like that guy picking up and trying to use two screwdrivers simultaneously.
Oh, so in theory, like if you could use two screwdrivers simultaneously, that'd be excellent. That'd be really good. And
yeah.
Some people can use two screwdrivers at the same time.
With practice, you can use 8, 10 monitors all at once.
Yeah, and then if you get the street cred of everyone knowing how many monitors you use, and then that can be your contribution to society. Hey, look how many monitors that guy uses. Except that's not much of a contribution to anything. So I don't want to be that guy.
Yeah, it turns out alt tabbing is really not that hard. You can kind of go between. Yeah. I mean, I use when I'm at home, quote unquote, I use a 27-inch Dell and the laptop, but I find that to be the perfect balance of multi and single tasking capacity, because it does allow me to have a side-by-side situation.
Yeah.
And there are things, especially since I do a bunch of user interface work, it is, and slide decks for that matter, doing that kind of stuff on the laptop specifically is slower. But I don't want the ability to have more than two. I will distract myself if I have more than that. And I have one of those 14-inch portable monitors. It's always in my backpack. I never take it out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was doing the same thing during my trip. I took it out like two or three times and then noticed that I needed to, like when I need to get up from my desk for a moment, it's so much easier to just throw the laptop in the bag than it is to like break down the external monitor, take it off the book, and then put it back on and balance it in just the right way and plug the cord into the laptop. And it's like, why? And one answer to that question is to reduce neck strain. And my neck feels fine having used the laptop. So yeah, whatever. I stretch sometimes and that's helpful.
Yeah. That's the whole benefit of the laptops. You can move the thing around.
Turns out that the form factor evolved for a reason.
Yep.
Laptops are good.
And they've been trying to unevolve it into a tablet for a decade now. Uh-huh.
Eventually, eventually another form factor will evolve, like the facial computing kind of thing. And I'm game for that. Like I'm interested in eventually strapping a computer to my face.
I do wonder if the final form of that, in quotes, is not going to be quite as enveloping as it's generally taken to be. Google Glass isn't quite what I'm talking about, and the solution I'm thinking about would be a little heavy, but I do wonder whether or not it would make more sense to have a solution that sits just like kind of in front of you.
Like the Samsung Wear Space, but for vision instead of for horse blinders.
I wonder if like the pursuit of making the headset look not ridiculous is too expensive a goal.
Mm-hmm.
No headset is going to look more futuristic and cool than the Vision Pro. It, like, they spent so much money on that thing.
Yeah.
And it still looks fucking looks stupid on me. Like, just embrace the fact that it looks fucking dumb and just build something that is ideal for doing. Because I would gladly, as long as there was no eye strain involved, it would be very nice to have a screen where you just look around and it's got, you know, I would still need the keyboard and mouse. But like for screen type, like, I'm waiting for a breakthrough in that, because there's basic cost reasons to believe that that will eventually happen. It's going to eventually be cheaper to produce micro OLED screens than to produce full size monitors. Like, this, it's the correct direction to head. They're constraining the design of them so radically to try to make my mom accept using them, and she's never going to use them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just not, that market is just not there.
Proudly exclude some customers is what you should do.
Yeah.
I saw one blogger talk about one of his favorite use cases of something like the Vision Pro. It's like one of those pairs of glasses. It's like the watered down version of the Vision Pro that also costs like 1/6 of the amount. It's basically like a computer monitor that you wear like on as glasses.
Yeah.
And he said something like, the nice thing about it is that I don't need to hold up my phone on the flight to watch a movie.
Yeah.
And I'm like, hang on a second. You don't need the glasses for that. You can probably, and I went to Amazon to confirm this, get like a neck mount for your cell phone to like suspend your cell phone in front of your face. That's a thing. And that looks obscenely absurd. But
well that's Google Cardboard, isn't it? Right? That's
not
whole...
quite. I know what you're talking about. That's not quite the same thing, though. Google Cardboard is like the thing that you slide your phone into, and like it has some lenses to like kind of approximate the VR sort of thing. And it's like fine for what it does, especially at the price point of like the low, low, low price of like $7.99 or something like that. $7.99.
I was going to say. That doesn't sound very...
Yeah, sorry. But anyway, this thing doesn't have those lenses. Rather, it's like here's my phone and I'm holding it in front of me right now. I'm holding it like 2 feet in front of my face. But wouldn't it be cool if instead of my hands were holding it, it were like a gooseneck thing that were like behind my neck and it's like holding it for me in front of my face, and now I can do anything with my hands.
Now imagine if that thing sat on the little fold-out table and had a hinge on it so you could have a keyboard and a trackpad, and it was called a laptop.
No, but the great thing about this is I'm holding it like kind of down and below my face, but you could have it here in front of your face, like at eye level, and that's somehow revolutionary.
That's literally the only innovation I'm waiting for in the laptop, like folding display. Like they keep coming out with all these. LG came out with their folding laptop, which conceptually is very cool, but I can't imagine giving a shit about it. Where it's like a 13-inch laptop where the keyboard sits on top of part of the display, so you can treat it like a normal laptop. But you can also take that off, and the screen unfolds flat and has a kickstand. So that it's 17 inches, but it's 17 inches on the table. And while I do applaud your capacity to crane your neck down without it hurting. I do find an excuse to take out the, I will never remember the name of this product. It is not called the Rook. It is called it's a bird thing. Anyway, it's the absurdly expensive but lightweight stand that I put my laptop on.
Oh, the Roost.
There we go, yeah. Roost. You don't own that, do you?
It's in my donation bucket right now.
Oh, very good. Okay. Yeah. You do have an excuse to know that. Okay.
The rip-off version that I got is now in the donation pile.
Solid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And by the way, I don't... So I do a mix of like when I'm using the laptop down here, I more like adjust where my eyes are looking rather than my neck.
Yeah.
So I do a little bit of both. I see people like hunched over their laptops and I'm like, note to self, don't do that thing.
Yeah.
Like where you get that like coffee shop lean. I like to think that I'm not leaning quite that far in. Maybe I am.
I catch myself doing it constantly. So
Okay.
That's the closest. I can't reflexively not do it. Mm-hmm. I gradually snap out of it. Usually when you walk by.
Okay. Happy to help.
Immediately think of posture when you walk by.
Happy to help.
Yeah, but So that's laptops. They're pretty cool. I want to build a new PC gaming rig.
Okay.
I think it's ready for version 2. I've got some new ideas. I've got some old ideas.
Bringing them into the future. Is this going to be made of wood as well?
I don't see why not.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't. Metal costs money. So. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so does wood, but, you know.
Less.
It is less. It's probably less. I don't actually know if that's true.
Okay.
I haven't really looked into bulk. It depends, because if you buy metal in sufficient quantities, it's not that expensive.
Yeah.
And if you don't, it's fucking insanely expensive.
Uh-huh.
If you need, like, just, like, a sheet of metal, it's a nightmare. But I don't know. Maybe that'll be worth it to make a svelte carrying case. I never did put the handle. That's really because the one design concession I'm going to make this time is I'm going to put the entire Dell monitor in the with the stand. I'm going to put it into the rig. In the original version, I tried to build a thing that uses the mounting system for the Dell monitor, and there was too much. There were too many design problems with doing that. Okay. It meant that I couldn't rotate the monitor. It meant I couldn't height adjust it. So I'm going to design something that just incorporates the stand and also without totally cannibalizing a monitor. If I use the stand, I don't have to take it off the stand. I can move it around.
That'd be nice.
But
What is the reason for the new rig? Is this like
this
a
is new
vast
shit, man?
This is not on my radar. So there's like just better hardware.
Not even. I'm gonna put my old computer in it probably, because AMD is not coming out with their new Zen 5
shit, new
shit until they're not coming out with that until later this year. I don't got that kind of time. I need new things now. Mm. I actually could replace my CPU pretty easily. It's pretty old, but. It would cost too much. I'd have to buy a whole, it's a whole thing. The thing that will inspire me to improve the hardware in this computer is if I do decide to, for some reason, finally build a Linux little server, because currently I have, an AMD 5600X in there, which is a very power efficient CPU, which is something that always holds me up with having persistent, always on hardware. Like the only things in this house that I tolerate being on all the time are the routers and the Mac Mini. And that's only because I've kilowatted the Mac Mini, and when it's not doing anything, it uses less than 1 watt of power. I can't stand even, it's why I don't have a NAS. Because I just don't like the idea of something just sitting there burning 40 watts all day drives me insane. I hate it.
40 watts all day. That's cheap.
It's not a lot of money. The inefficiency of it just drives me crazy.
The inefficiency or the untapped utility of a NAS always being there by your side.
This is what I need you for. Yeah. Is you can get over that threshold, but I can't follow you there.
You could probably figure out some kind of use case, and you have for the Mac Mini, of something like that being on and available for you all the time.
Elaborate on how strong this is. Most of the reason the Mac Mini is on all the time is because it's a very useful method to get power to the speakers that are sitting there, and I can use AirPlay to plug things there. It runs into a DAC before it gets to the speakers. And that DAC uses too much power, so I turn that off. So I can't actually use it for AirPlay unless I walk over and turn it on.
Okay. So I think that's a legit thing to turn off, though. Like, you can only enjoy sound when you're in this room. Like, that's, you have to be there for that. But I'm talking about, like, when you're talking about a NAS, you could set up a thing that you could set up a personal cloud that's available for you when you're away from the house and you're not available to turn something on. Like, that actually could be a reason to leave it turned on all the time.
So that I'm blaming on Spectrum, because the upload speeds out of this house are still only 20 megs per second, which is abysmal. It's incredibly frustrating, because I would pay a substantial premium for better upload speeds out of the house.
Mm-hmm. What about Starlink? Is that a thing here yet?
What? I'm not willing to pay that level of premium for it. Also, Starlink's not that reliable in the grand scheme of things.
Isn't it? Oh, okay. No. I was under the impression that it was pretty reliable.
Clouds.
And I was also under the impression that the premium was not that high over Spectrum for internet. I guess I could investigate it.
It's not my impression of it.
I thought internet from them was like $100 a month.
I guess when I can reinvestigate that. I haven't looked at it in a long time.
It might be worth taking a look into. I don't know, but it might be worth taking a look into.
I have more candidly considered getting an Azure server than building a home server in my house at this point in time. Maybe. We'll see. It's one of many, many things I'm not going to get done this summer. So, in a growing list.
But you can enjoy the process of not getting it done.
Not as much as I would like.
Okay.
Yeah. No, that part does suck. You do, in fact, have to do the things.
In order to get the enjoyment.
So that's the other thing with the polishing the foundation. There is, even though I have tremendous respect for and probably an overzealous maintenance of the foundation, I am still, like, completing tasks. Yeah. Not as many as I probably ought to be getting done, but they are getting done. You know, I've rewired at least one plug Are there 50 to go? Yes. Will I get faster at them as I go? I don't know.
One is a lot more than zero, so well done.
It is for certain values of zero, yeah. Unfortunately, there's 50 to go. And on 49. That scale,
49.
It's really not. That's fair. That's fair. You make a good point.
You can round that. If you're rounding, then you don't round that up to 100 anymore. So that's good.
I have it down to zero. So much Romex to get through.
49 is much more than zero, and yet you can round it down to zero.
Yeah. Was that supposed to be encouraging? That doesn't knows? Feel encouraging. Is there anything else we need to cover on this thing?
I think we can round it down to zero.
All right. Appreciate your time as always, Matt. Thanks for being part of the Machination Log.
Okay.
This may have new theme music. Depends on whether I do that. I'll do it tomorrow or I won't. I know exactly what it should sound like. I know which instruments I'm going to use.
This you said this is season 12. Is that a new season?
It could be. We're only 7 episodes into this one, so I feel like we really ought to keep going. But okay,
yeah, and nothing's really changed, I think. I mean, the building's over there.
That's depressing to think about, but yeah.
The building's over there. Yeah, I saw that the paths are nicely paved, so that's changed too.
Not on the way to Jacob's house, but yeah.
It's hot outside.
It is hell on earth outside, yeah. That's true. It's a new season. It's fucking summer. Welcome. Right you are, Matt. New theme song coming in. I need to rename this file now. It auto-named it to episode 7, so.
Okay. What a short season. Oh, well, that's fine.
They always are, and they just get shorter.
No, that's not true. Wasn't there one season that was 0 or 1 episodes long?
Oh, I was being more philosophical than that. Yeah, no, the Mac Log plays it pretty loose on episode counts for seasons.
Well, anyway, this has been fun. Thanks for picking me up from the airport, too.
My pleasure. Get back to work, everybody. I won't leave that part in. It's too mean. Season 11, episode 7, /season 12, episode 1, take 2. Matt, we're ready to... No spoilers. We're ready to go with revising car-related activities. Including but not limited to the following topics, which I'm sure we can hit more efficiently than we did last time. Those include my disappointment with the Jabra Speak 255 teleconferencing hockey puck looking thing.
The thing we tried to record in the car with.
Yes.
Yeah, that's why these upcoming things are car related.
Yes. Yeah. It sounds like shit. It does isolate the voices quite well, I would argue too well, such that the actual quality of the sound is compromised. So that's not great. And it's not a triangle.
And it's even worse because it shut off in the middle of the recording.
Yeah, it also did that.
So this is the reason why we're recording this now.
Yeah, at least partially. We also did that because it wasn't dead air. It was just kind of dead talking points. There was a lot of distracting car that is some of the worst drive. I'm usually pretty lax about like people being around me. I don't normally get like perturbed on the road, and I had 2 consecutive bad experiences.
We nearly died.
Yeah, we were within 3
nearlies.
Yeah, I don't know if there's a name for that kind of event.
A near death experience.
Yeah, yeah, but like the phases of the forks in the road. What do you call any specific juncture that increases your categorical risk of death? There's got to be a name for that.
The name is slipping my mind right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like the thresholds of. But anyway, yeah, so that thing sucks. I'm not going to return it, though, because it's way past its return window. I'm just going to hold on to it for the rest of my life. The next topic.
You should just throw it in the trash.
What?
You should throw it in the donation pile.
Oh, I'll
donate
to
a local nonprofit.
Nonprofit garbage can? Is that
That's what I meant, yeah.
Is that your euphemism? Uh-huh. Do you actually take that stuff to the donation place?
I have a bin in the back of my car labeled donate that I sometimes do actually get to. Oftentimes, though, my donation things get donated into the trash can.
Very good.
Yeah.
The next thing I have on here is Peter Zion and Living Out the End of the World in America.
Yeah, we were talking about, this is one of the couple bullet points that I provided to you before I jumped onto the flight. So I read Peter Zion's book. I'm not sure if I'm saying the name right, whatever, it doesn't matter. Peter's book called The End of the World is Just the Beginning. And one of the, spoiler alert, one of the things, one of the conclusions is because of demographics all over the world, except in large part for in America, the future is not going to be fine, except for in large part in America. So I'm feeling better about living in America.
I have a variant on the previous critique that I had of that specific. I guess it wasn't even necessarily a critique. It was just kind of a curiosity about the perspective, because a lot of people would judge living in America to suck right now anyway. So the idea that America would be okay is referring at a purely material level, I'm assuming, as opposed to on some sort of socio-spiritual level.
Material, and I guess the socio-spiritual will like kind of cover itself when, and this is, I guess, one of his arguments, maybe not so much in the book, but perhaps more in the podcast that I listened to accompany the book. So it's like the idea is that we're going to look, we Americans or people in America that have like gotten onto the lifeboat are going to look elsewhere in the world and see how shitty things are and say, wow. Looks like things are shitty everywhere else. I should be grateful for what I have. Or at least that's me imagining how a future could go. So, yeah, that's what's going on there.
But it's a general downward comparison. I assume this guy thinks things are going to get worse based on the name of his book.
Generally, yes.
Yeah. So, that is what it is. Next topic in order was New Zealand.
Sort of. The same kind of topic. Yeah, we were talking about New Zealand as a result of
this. These should all be natural segues. It was a conversation.
Yeah, okay.
Lost on the wind.
and almost accompanied by the loss of our lives.
Yep.
Yeah.
Within three thresholds of danger or whatever they're called.
Yeah, New Zealand is going to do well because it has access to natural resources, including cows and grass. Check it.
Very good.
Yeah.
And millionaires.
It's got natural resources,
incredible thriving facility. It is remarkable the degree to which all of the term I used was bunker talk, which you asked me about, and that's just rich people talking about what they're going to do when they don't need people anymore or can't rely on them. And it strikes one quite readily that there is a group of people that get hit hardest by inflation. And it is the poor, of course, in actual absolute terms. But in relative terms, it is the rich, since the rich have the largest percentage of their total usable like capacity in monetary instruments. And those are devalued fast. Like everyone has some specific industrial capacity that they are capable of. Mm-hmm. And as you bank more money, you divorce yourself from that more and more, what you can actually produce and what you can summon as a result of the capital you've accrued diverge. Yeah. And at some level, the poor end up benefiting from, they frequently at least benefit from inflation, as long as it doesn't get out of hand, they can benefit from inflation because wages do increase consequently with inflation.
Okay.
And if they don't have money, or even better, if they have debt, inflation ends up being, again, good for them is not the right term because it causes all kinds of other weird problems to have your markets fluctuate that much. Living in a bunker, anything you didn't bring to the bunker is a problem. And money really, really won't go very far as soon as bunkers become necessary.
Yeah, I'm not really thinking so much of the world that requires bunkers. I'll just probably be dead like most other people in that situation.
Right,
so I'm
right,
not really planning for this. Also, I've given up trying to plan for those situations. The other thing is, yeah, inflation. Don't the very rich people hold like not cash, but capital that also accumulates or compounds in the cases of inflation, or at least in many cases of inflation?
Varies wildly.
Okay.
Usually that stuff's held by corporations. So if they can be said to hold the corporation, then sure. It just depends on the way the fabric of society breaks down. I mean, that was mostly just a diversion point on the bunker thing, because I'm just spinning off into... I actually think about this specific topic quite frequently with that. Like, there are plenty of versions of, and I assume Peter talks is alluding to, versions of the end of the world that don't involve... Even if they involve some amount of social collapse, it's not total. Like, people are still theoretically talking to each other, uh-huh, and exchanges are occurring. In that scenario, I frequently think about industrial capacity as an important 401k-like mechanism of being able to literally produce things as opposed to being able to buy them. And that specifically is coming up in my head because I've been thinking recently about currently the stock market is correcting, is the polite term. And it does make me curious now that...
Since when?
Over the last handful of months, it's been pretty weak. Okay. NVIDIA has absorbed basically all of the upward momentum of the stock market for the last year.
Well done.
On the back of AI. It's really fucking embarrassing how much money they've pulled together. But it has made me wonder about now that 401ks, like the first people who saved entirely in 401ks because pensions had been done away with are starting to retire. And it does make me curious how much 401ks are going to be. I mean, obviously, to the degree that you can call anything in the stock market a pyramid scheme, of course, like at some low level, sure, if society for some reason decides to cash out, anything becomes a pyramid scheme at a market level. 401ks might be a really egregious version of this.
Yep.
Because especially if young people are not investing in them, or saving in them, and people start withdrawing from
goodbye
that system,
yep,
that's going to be a real fucking problem.
Mm-hmm.
So that's fun.
Time to start burying some gold in New Zealand.
Exactly. Where it belongs. Put it back in the ground.
What else have you got on your notes there?
Southeast Asia.
Okay, yeah.
Should just brought up as an alternate place to live.
And I was Thailand.
And I'm happy to report that while I was in the middle of dodging that car that wouldn't turn its blinker off, that it was...
The white one.
Yeah.
There was a white car and a black car that we were dealing with.
Yeah, the black car was just an asshole. The white car was...
Insane.
It was insane or drugged or something. Mm-hmm. It was in front of us. It was behind us. It tried to merge into us. It was generally not good.
It turned on its right turn blinker, then turned left.
Yeah, it was really... not, it should not have been on the highway.
After pulling back onto the highway, after having been off of the highway... Remember that? That's how we met that car.
Oh, yeah. No.
They were on the shoulder, and then they mashed the accelerator and got onto the car in some swervy manner.
Yeah. I remember it like it was yesterday.
Yeah, same.
Yeah. I was merely happy to report that when you asked me, what I'll say is call my bluff on it, because I was not prepared to answer the question. I wasn't prepared to be pressed on the assertion that I made about the civility of Southeast Asia.
Uh-huh.
But having done a cursory search, the three countries I named were Laos, Thailand, and Vietnam. Yeah. And I'm very proud to say that that does comprise the majority of the landmass I was talking about. Because okay. I was terrified while coming up with those names that I was going to not remember any of the countries in that region. So I actually did cover that pretty well. But it also seems like they're doing okay. In fact, Thailand looks like they're doing some sort of, in the very recent news, is actually relaxing restrictions on tourism. So, and of course, I guess part of the thing that sort of threw me that I didn't mention before, I mean, you've been in that region recently.
So. Uh-huh. Yeah, I went there about 6 months ago.
Yeah, I mean, what was your impression of it as a permanent living space?
There are plenty of expats that do it, and they're kind of creepy, but it seems like they're having a pretty good life. They're creepy generally. Not all of them are like that, obviously, but
sure.
Like they seem to be living a pretty good life. You get coconuts. You get good meals for very cheap. You get to go to the beach. You get to do stuff. So, yeah, a fun time there, especially hanging out at the co-working place. Grind time with the logos being gears anyway. So yeah, I had a good time there, and people seem to be having a good time there.
Yeah. it seems like the kind of thing that would get boring depending on temperament.
I also agree with that. Yeah,
that's that would be it. The next thing I have in here is strategic nukes.
Say more.
What? Oh, I don't know. I think this was still in Peter Zion's book talking about Russia potentially nuking Europe.
The reason this came up is because you brought up, I think your point was like, oh, the ship has sailed on Europe, but you said that and I agreed with you, and then I started talking about nukes in relation, strategic nukes in relationship to the Russian and Ukraine war right now, and you were like, oh, that's not why I said that, but okay, that too.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah, there were sort of two prongs to that conversation. The first one was that I just on Bayesian priors, you have to believe that Russia's not going to nuke anyone because no one's had them for longer than Russia without using them.
Okay.
It seems reasonable to assume they're going to continue not to, but because institutionally
Bayesian prior could be something like, oh, there's a 10% probability of nuking per year, and then you downward correct that 9%, 8%, 7%, and so on. And yet a 1% probability of nuking per year, if you corrected it all the way down to 1%, is still fucking terrifyingly high.
It's here's the problem, and I don't want to keep referring back to a conversation we already had, so I should stop doing that. The Russian Bayesian prior is 0% because they've never done it before.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's technically not wrong.
This is the problem with statistics. You have to set it somewhere, and I agree it is possible. There's a model to be investigated here. The problem is that post-1945, and that specific situation is quite different than any other situation either superpower has found themselves in since. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no comparable situation to the Japanese. the specific insult of the Japanese assault on the United States is a completely different scenario than Russia is ever going to find itself in with Europe. There has not been a nuke fired between two states for any reason since the very first time it happened. That doesn't mean it won't happen. All I'm saying is I don't think Russia's going to do it. That's basically what I'm saying. Russia's had many opportunities to do it. They've had theoretically the clout to do so. If Pakistan does fire a nuke, we will annihilate the country entirely.
Uh-huh.
That will be it for Pakistan. And that's a really solid deterrent for Pakistan, which is why I think the most likely actor is going to be a rogue state. It will be some sort of third-party action by fanatics of one form or another. That seems by far the most likely, because anybody else who has access to nuclear arms lives in a way that is too nice for them to even contemplate using them. It just doesn't make any sense.
Don't want to die. Okay. Well, yeah. If Peter is to be believed, Russia is in the core. Russia is in the process of becoming a failed state over the next 20 years or so. So it could like use nukes defensively if it like finds itself on its heels during the war, or it just loses its nukes as a failed state to these like third states or not even states, people just like kind of sweeping up the nukes that are available there. And so that could be a thing in the next 10, 20 years.
I don't know how possible that actually is anymore, because most of those nukes, I'll back up. I don't know how long a Russian nuke is good for.
I don't know. That's literally a thing that came up on the podcast that I'm referring to right now. It's like, the question was like, what if Russia tries to nuke you, or anybody tries to nuke you? They push the button and then nothing happens and just doesn't work. Like, how do you respond in a situation like that? It's like, get ready to get nuked, and then nothing happens. It's like, oh shit, they just tried to do that. Okay, what do we do now?
I mean, I'm pretty sure you have to maintain that stuff for it to continue to work, especially an ICBM. Like, an ICBM must require significant maintenance to function properly. Bombs not so much, but transporting bombs is a colossal pain in the ass. So
yeah.
No, I mean there's hurdles to it. No, my it was so, yeah, that was the first point, was that if anyone's going to fire a nuke, I don't think it'll be Russia. Also, I'm surprised. I mean, when was this book written? Because Russia's economy is doing better than any proximate economy right
now. The book was updated, like a new edition of it, and like it had new sections added to it about 3 years ago. Yeah, excuse me. Yeah, it right as the war was breaking out in the beginning of 2022.
Okay, that's forgivable, because currently Russia's economy is doing better than just about any in the world at scale. Their wartime economy has like been an absolute shot in the arm for them.
Wow. Okay.
China has backed them up where they've needed to on a market basis, and they have just been plowing away. The injection of capital into the middle class through the military, basic Keynesian economics, has been extremely successful the last 2 years. They also have no problem selling their gas. In fact, they're selling it for more now than they were before because the market is constrained. No, Russia's actually doing quite well right now. Which I'd like to say I predicted, but it wasn't quite. I listened back to the couple things a couple years ago about like the long-term strategy that, and I will say I believe my original guess was that this was a 5-year gambit to bring Russia closer to China and away from the Western economies, and that has sort of panned out. I had no way predicted how successful this would be in the short term. I was under the impression this was a deliberate failure for Russia short term for a long term game. But no, it's just working in general for them.
Well done.
they've done pretty well this time. Which is more egg on the face of basically every analyst who talks about any of this stuff, because nobody was predicting that at the time. Everybody thought Russia invading Ukraine was this hot-headed, insane thing to do. Nope. It's turned out to be one of the most economically successful things Russia's done in a century. So.
Okay.
Yeah. It is what it is. Yeah. Anyway, speaking of the European Union, speaking of the exact opposite situation, it was the Common Agricultural Policy is the name of the agricultural policy I was trying to remember, which was basically Germany's concession to France to make sure that they stayed within it. Germany has all the industrial capacity. They build cars. They build machines. They export that within a free market zone. It's obvious why Germany likes the European Union. France had to get a couple of sops, and one of those was to their farmers. So the Common Agricultural Policy basically puts a kibosh on Eastern Europeans, putting the squeeze on the more affluent agriculture in France, among other concessions. But yeah, no, none of that shit's working right now. Germany's been just like barreling toward turning themselves into a third world country with the way that their industrial base is working.
Powered by gross coal.
Yeah, powered by lignite, coal, biomass, like literally burning biomass. You know, just it's embarrassing. They have the trains. They're supposed to be the train culture. They're supposed to be doing the long-term infrastructural things that are permitted by having a somewhat intelligent parliamentary system, and none of that's working.
Mm-hmm.
And that's incredibly depressing.
Sorry, Germany.
Yep. Better luck next century or whatever. Yeah, it was... forget who that was. I forget whose headline it was, but they had Angela Merkel very thankful for the threshold on worst leader in German history is. there's that. And then Taiwan, which is the same thing you always talk about with Taiwan, which is just how did we get here? What in the hell? Why does TSMC invest more money in their in their buildings than we do in our highway system? It's really just there's a lot of money flowing.
You were talking about Intel alongside TSMC yesterday as well.
Yeah, the financialization, the Reaganomic financialization of the United States. It's done a number on even our corporations' capacity to put in long-term investments. Like, to some degree, that's always been coaxed by the government. Basic research has always been the government's purview. But that's all just been hollowed out entirely, which is pretty embarrassing. We're being forced to think about it again, because if something dumb happens in Taiwan, which is not impossible, I think I posited that was maybe the most likely time for nukes to fly would be if Taiwan was invaded, because we literally can't let China have the semiconductor facilities in Taiwan. Uh-huh. Even if China starts building things that are comparable to what TSMC is doing, which they're not. TSMC is at least a node ahead of everybody else materially. But even if they did, we don't have the capacity to catch up in time. We're working on it. TSMC's building a factory over here. But even that's going to take billions of dollars and years to put together. Mm-hmm. Like, and you need the institutional knowledge. It all needs to come together, and that's not happening anywhere near now. So that transitioned to vehicle markets.
I can't remember this part. What did we talk about there?
I was talking about the fact that I used to make fun of the fact that China somehow graduated more engineers every year than we have in the United States, yeah. And they can't make a car. But they finally figured out EVs. How to make yep. EVs. Yep.
For like $15,000, I think you said.
Less. Yeah, they're yeah.
No, and we've banned them from this market.
Yeah, we've functionally banned Chinese EVs from the American market. We won't the basic ban. The method by which we do that. I mean, there is a tariff on the stuff, but that's not actually what prevents it. What prevents it is labor requirements, where you have to build a certain fraction of the car in the United States. And we just won't give them any permits to mm-hmm. put those factories here. So we use that as basically a loophole to keep them out of the country.
And that's the thing that keeps you riding in your car for years, yep. for more years.
For more years than I could have ever imagined.
Yeah.
Yep. Not replacing that car anytime soon. And the last one is you dropped two letters out of your name.
Dropped two letters out of my name because it was too cumbersome to communicate. And some Polish instructor that I had in the past was gnawing away at my soul for a number of years after attendance one day in intermediate lab class during my sophomore year of college.
Despite himself having a fucked up name.
Yeah, Polish professor, Dr. Vall, laughed at me when he called my name. Well, maybe not.
Oh, you didn't say he was a Polish professor.
Didn't I? He was a Polish professor.
Okay.
He was a Polish guy. He wasn't teaching me the Polish language. He just happened to be a Polish guy.
It did not even cross my mind that might be what you said.
Okay, that seems to...
Thank you for the correction, but it's...
Yeah, I haven't
clarification, there we go.
You're welcome. I haven't studied that language, and yet he knew the language because he was a Polish guy. So he was calling attendance during the first day of intermediate lab class, and I said just a moment ago, he laughed at me. That's taken a little too far. He laughed when he called my name. And he said, Matt Schmeida. And I said, yeah, Dr. Vall, it's Schmeida. He said, Schmeida. And he laughed a little bit more. And anyway, he probably put the check mark next to my name. And I was like, what just happened there? And for several years afterwards, I was like, what was he laughing about that day? And finally, I did look into it. And I was like, what does my name even mean? Why did Dr. Vall laugh that day? And I came to find out that it means something like scoundrel or bastard or something like that. And I was like, oh. And I've kind of like it's always been a challenge communicating. It's like, how do you spell your name? Okay, here we go. S-Z-M. And you're like, did that guy just say Z? Did he say C? Oh, I'm back. Anyway, he's on to the sixth letter now. Could you spell that again? I'll just write it down for you. I don't want to have to do that anymore. So for those couple reasons and even more, I'm like, I'm gonna make a change. So I'm making the change. Now my name is Smida, S-M-I-D-A. My first name is still Matt. Matt Smida, S-M-I-D-A. And I'm in the process right now of changing it legally It's been about 15 times filing and refiling paperwork with the courts as they ask me to correct one more thing at a time. This is a process by which you interact with the courts in Central Florida. They find one thing, maybe sometimes two things, wrong with your filing at a time. They ask you to correct that, and then you do it again 15 more times. And finally, it seems that it's been accepted, and now I have the boss form to fill out, the final form. And I may go in, I definitely will go in for fingerprinting as a result of this process, and I may even go before a judge. And the judge may even ask me, hey, why are you doing this? And I'll probably tell him the Dr. Vol story.
That'll probably go okay. Are you going to change your fingerprints?
I'm going to change my fingerprints okay. too. I've got lemons. I've got acid.
Have you never done a fingerprinting?
I've done some kind of fingerprint situation before, but they're going to need more.
More of them?
More fingerprints.
Okay. All right. Not just more fingers, you know. Just the count increases. I'm trying to remember how many I did at the post office.
What?
I had to do work at a post office for my job. Yeah. And I had to get, I believe, four. I don't think they took my thumbs. I think they just took the regular fingers.
That's kind of ridiculous. Called. Like if you're gonna save 2 out of 10, you'd probably want to like not do the ring finger.
I could easily be misremembering this, but I would swear I only had ink on the four whatever non-thumb fingers. That probably didn't happen, but it's a nice memory.
A nice memory to have a clean thumb that day. Yeah. Yeah, I've done fingerprinting in the past, but like more people need to know about more fingerprints. So there you go.
Yeah.
Change your name, you get fingerprinted.
It is what it is. Yeah. That's the court system. I think that's all we had here. Yep. Is there anything you want to tack on to the end of this lurid conversation? That's not the adjective I wanted, but it's the one we're going with. That was abrupt.
No, nothing else.
All right. Very good. I think we already said all the machination log stuff, so I don't have to do that again. And break.